But I will soon.
The Credot Canvas by Keith Bunin, starring Hilary Swank, Jeremy Sisto, and Chad Lowe. Next time on LA Theatre Works.
That's this Sunday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. LA Theatre Works right here on KPFK.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org. Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
Cue the conga playing penguins.
Live at you.
For real, for real.
Oh, yeah.
The program's about to begin.
Hey, hey.
Radio.
For the people.
Come on.
The Mojo
Hour of Power.
These guys owe me money. This is Jeff Keller, KPFK 90.7 FM, Pocho Hour of Power. How are we doing, people?
What's happening, Jeffrey?
What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, Coach?
I heard y'all missed me last week.
Yep. But we want to know
What
happened with your game, your final game, your final coaching game in sports ball, high school sports ball.
We won.
All right.
Did you remember to thank Jesus after the game?
Jesus. That's what I think. If it weren't for Jesus, I'd never been there.
You're a hell of a running back.
And a hurdler, evidently. How we doing, guys? What's going on? I heard you can only con some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time.
Yep, that's the results on Tuesday for the, I call it the Mamdani tsunami, but of course it was all over the place. It wasn't just in New York City, but the elections results were pretty good.
Well, Trump says it's all fake news, though.
Yeah, well, you know, Trump says that Walmart is offering a 99-cent Thanksgiving dinner, too.
Well, you saw the stats today where the economy is tanking. Where groceries are up like 20%. And gas, I mean, everything is going up. And Trump is saying it's a lie.
Yeah.
But that guy hasn't bought groceries in his entire life, probably.
That's right.
No.
He calls groceries an old-fashioned word.
he an old-fashioned word.
What does he eat? Like Jetson pills?
He doesn't even buy his own KFC.
What is this groceries thing y'all keep talking about? What is this?
I know. Well, he doesn't need groceries because his food is Big Macs. So, yeah, I can understand.
Now, he might be perturbed because a Happy Meal went up a couple bucks. But besides that.
They do have that $6 breakfast special at, some locations, McDonald's.
Well, you know the original Happy Meal was the taco. Because if you turn it upside down, it smiles. But then also all the fillings fall out. So.
And tacos just make you smile.
I'll just make you happy, man. It's the original Happy Meal.
But yeah, I know the economy and the job market, all those people he put in place to manipulate, guess what? They're not manipulating. The truth is coming to fruition.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens if we get a pass to Epstein Island and see who all took the tour.
Well, it's been a great week because the Dodgers won, baby. That's all I
know. Oh, yeah, that too. And, yeah, we've Before we talk about that, I just want to say we're going to have a great show today with Patricia Guadalupe, our D.C. correspondent, Russell Contreras, our man in New Mexico, reporting nationally for Axios.com. And then we're going to have a special segment where I thought it would be a great idea for Jeff Keller to have his moment in the sun here and get interviewed about his coaching career. I think it would be amazing. But we're going to have Charlie Gonzalez of the Speedy Gonzalez Sports Report, which I just want to say, this is the only show where we call it the Speedy Gonzalez Sports Report. And I'm probably the only idiot that calls it that because I think that's hilarious. And he does speak fast. But Charlie, who does our sports report for KPFK, will join us. And we're going to talk Dodgers. And, man, I mean, are they going to the White House? You know, you can't separate the politics from sports, right?
There's only one player on the Dodgers going to the White House, and that's Trinan. And he sucked anyways. You can't be MAGA and suck. I'm just saying.
He's gonna deliver the groceries.
He'll have a handful of Happy Meals. I'm telling you right now. He was so bad they didn't even pitch him anymore. I mean, I thought he was trying to throw the series. He was so bad.
Man, he was like, yeah. Well, luckily the rest of the Dodgers came through. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have. We'll talk about the World Series, the Dodgers, and I'm going to insert the politics. And, of course, then we get to talk about Jeff Keller and his.
And they beat a Canadian team. Boo those Canadians with their free health care.
And their niceness. Get out of here.
And their American immigrants. They accept their immigrants.
Like their socialist healthcare program.
Send all the frostbacks down here. We love them. They work in all kinds of weather.
They're taking our jobs.
They took my job at the ice cream factory. But, I saw, before we strike up the band, I want to say I saw a video, and it was I saw a lot of, you know, videos of the Blue Jay fans suffering a lot, breaking TVs and all that, and not being, you know, polite Canadians. I understand it's sports, but then a young woman screaming on the street, you know, blank the Dodgers, blank LA, whatever. And I hadn't heard that level of anti-LA kind of sports, you know, yelling since I went up to see the Dodgers play the Giants in San Francisco. And we were running down the street going like, we need to get out of here because people were screaming, blank the Dodgers, blank LA. But maybe it was just Canadians had frostbacks. So anyway, but hey, guys, do you think we should strike up the band?
Let's strike up the band, please. Woo!
Correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hail to Patricia, she comes to spread the cheese. She comes with all the gossip, she's here to spill the tea.
Hey, folks, here we are again. Hello, everybody out there in Radio Land.
Yay, Patricia. Is it your birthday, Patricia?
It was yesterday, but thank you, yes.
Hey, we're only on once a week, so... Happy birthday.
You didn't do a special broadcast for me yesterday, and I'm very
No, the antenna was down.
Yeah, the antenna took the day off. Okay. Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you. I was listening a little bit to what you were saying about the Dodgers, and I was thinking, man, two strikes away or two outs away,
yeah,
and the Canadians would have gotten it. And I think the Canadians were mad that the Dodgers won because they know that the one of the owners of the Dodgers is has a bunch of detention centers, and so they were just mad in solidarity with the immigrant community.
Sure, that was it.
Yeah, that was exactly it. And speaking of the blue wave, if you like that little transition there, you can hear that in the background. Shh. That's a gigantic wave that came over on Tuesday night. And it was, I'm not exaggerating to say, it really was a shellacking everywhere of the Republicans. Not a single Republican candidate anywhere won anything. Not one. And, some of the Republicans were saying, well, it was, in blue states and people are going to vote for blue in blue states. But I will point out that there were some seats in Mississippi people that flipped from Republican to Democrat. And even in the places where the Democrats were expected to win, there was never the expectation that it was going to be so wide of a margin. To the point that the Prop 50 out there in California was called for the yes column right when the polls closed. There were still people standing in line waiting to vote.
65%. You never hear that high of a number, but that's they call 55% a landslide, right? Like, they call that a mandate, a decisive victory. 65%.
And the thing is, too, you got to keep in mind, there wasn't anybody in that ballot that was running. It was just one.
I kept flipping the ballot over and looking for a dog catch or something. give me something.
No. Well, you have California's ballot is famous for being almost like a booklet. There's so many things on there when you go and vote. And this was the first time in a long time that there wasn't a single person running for anything. And so for all of those people to go out, including 7 million early voters, 7 million.
Yeah.
On just one item when nobody was running should tell you a lot. And then over on this side of the world, on the East Coast, you had the former capital of the Confederacy bringing in the first woman governor of Virginia and the first Muslim lieutenant governor of Virginia, and of course we mentioned briefly what was going on in New York with the first Muslim mayor of New York, and across the river in New Jersey. That's not the first woman governor, but it was a landslide. I mean, all of these races were called really early for, the polls were closing, and then within like a half an hour, they were already calling it because the numbers were so overwhelming for the Democratic voter, or for the Democratic candidate, rather, that there was no way that the Republican was going to catch up. And of course, what was the president's response after that, the next day or even that night? Well, I wasn't on the ballot, so it wasn't me. I had nothing to do with this. It's the shutdown. And of course, if anybody believes that, there's a bridge in New York for sale if you're interested in it. But of course, this was a repudiation, a big time repudiation of the Trump policies on immigration, on DEI, on the shutdown, on everything, on the all the layoffs. I mean, we're now dealing, going into probably the busiest travel season of the year, with the potential of dozens of cancellations at the airports because there just isn't enough personnel partly because of the government shutdown, and partly because, if you remember, Elon and his Doge bags getting rid of everybody and then realizing, oh, yeah, I guess we do need air traffic controllers. Oh, sorry.
Well, you know, the scary part about the election, though, and they're trying to ignore, is like in New York and California, this is the biggest turnout they've had in like a couple decades.
Yeah, in fact, in New York, it was the biggest turnout since 1969.
Wow. So is Mamdani like the first Muslim mayor?
He's not the first immigrant in New York. But
he's not even the youngest, right?
The youngest was about 100 years ago.
I think he's the first rapper ever elected mayor.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Cardamon. That's his rap name.
and he is definitely the first Muslim. He's definitely the first generation of this particular time, and most definitely the first rapper. Here's the thing: he speaks fluent Spanish, he speaks fluent Arabic, he speaks fluent Hindi, he speaks fluent Urdu, and on top of English. So one of the things that he did during the campaign was not only cut a bunch of different commercials in all these different languages, but he went to all of these communities himself. When a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, the establishment, who knows what's going to happen. And he really captured the attention of especially a lot of the young voters who were disgusted, not just by what is going on with the Trump administration, but tired of the establishment Democratic Party.
Yeah.
If you notice, the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, who is from New York, had never endorsed Mamdani, never said anything, has yet to say anything about it. And at a time when you've actually gotten a lot of young people to come out and vote, where they always say stereotypically, oh, it's the older people that go out and vote. But he got a lot of people. And in the Latino neighborhoods of New York, he won overwhelmingly. And the same thing happened with the governor-elect in New Jersey in the Latino neighborhood theirs. And the same thing in Northern Virginia, where the majority of Latinos in Virginia live, with the suburbs of Washington, D.C. So there were many, many places where the Democrats really put a mark on things. In Detroit, for instance, the first woman to be elected mayor of Detroit becomes the youngest Black woman to lead a U.S. major city. This is sort of like a blueprint for the midterms next year, as long as the Democrats are able to capture that momentum and that anger that a lot of people feel.
All they have to do is come up with some kind of unifying narrative, because they failed to do that at every turn.
And you can definitely see the difference in the progressive and young end of the party and the older, more establishment end of the party. It's no coincidence that yesterday Nancy Pelosi said, okay, that's it for me, retiring after more than 40 years.
Yeah, and Schumer should be thinking the same thing. That guy, I don't know what – I think he's just way behind the times. He talks to imaginary Republicans. He just has this he's not feeling it. I don't think he understands what to do or how to do anything.
It's changed for him, right? Like these kids are like looking at capitalism saying, hey, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're not going to get houses. We're not going to be able to get
I don't think they're afraid to vote for democratic socialism.
No, because they're tired of capitalism.
But here's the irony of that whole thing about socialism, because you have, Andrew Cuomo, who was the establishment candidate in New York, former governor, from a prominent political family there complaining about socialism. The guy has a taxpayer-funded pension. I mean, you know, come on, people. And, you know, and what is
probably a member of AAA, which is a notorious socialist organization.
Yeah, and what do they say? What socialism is when the fire department rescues your house from burning down, and capitalism is when your insurance company denies your claim.
Right. You know? and that's but you know what though? That's funny, but it's true. That's how these kids are seeing it now.
Yeah, and so they're looking at this and they're saying, you know, all of these people, well, you know, Mamdani doesn't have any experience and we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, what's going to happen with all of these, you know, programs that he wants. The problem is that all of these other folks that you had been counting on for the longest time as part of the establishment have not done the job.
They're
so
he has finger on the pulse.
Yeah, and you know
what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you have knuckleheads, because there's no other nice way to say it. You know, today they started delivering the Christmas tree to the Rockefeller Center, and people are already on social media. This is going to be the last year that we see the Christmas tree. Oh my God! And they're already teaching Arabic numerals in school. Holy cow!
That's so funny.
These are real people saying these really idiotic things.
Right. Did you see the New York Post? I mean, it's so crazy.
And that's the thing, you know. Oh, well, he's a socialist, democratic, communist. I mean, you know, make up your mind, people. I mean, is he a socialist or
can't be
a communist?
They're so trained just to react to the word socialist.
And the craziness is, when he's talking about taxing the rich, raising their tax, he just wants to raise it to the same level that they're being taxed in New Jersey. It's nothing extravagant.
Yeah. And you know, and what he's talking about, people in New York who make over $500,000 a year to $1 million. We're not talking about the average person out there. You know, he's talking about making sure that the people at the high end, not at the highest end, pay their share of the, you know, to keep the economy in New York going. This is not anything that's going to bankrupt anybody, especially somebody who's making, you know, tens of millions of dollars, like a lot of people on Wall Street are. And they're the ones that are all flipping out about this. Oh, well, he's going to bring all of these, you know, free childcare and free buses and free this and free that. And what he's basically telling people is that what has been happening before has not worked, and we need to come in here with a different set of hands and a different set of strategies and tactics to not only get people animated, but to make the city more affordable. And there's already people saying, oh, well, now that he's won, we're all going to leave. And of course, the joke is, the minute that you leave, that's going to actually be more housing for more people. So maybe a good way to have some more affordable housing in New York. I mean, the Islamophobia and the ridiculousness of this attack on this guy who hasn't even started. He's not going to be inaugurated until January 1st. But people are already in hysteria in some parts of New York, saying, oh, my God, what's going to happen now? Simply because he is Muslim. It has nothing to do with anything else. Some of it is, the social programs that he's talking about. But when you say nonsense like, well, this is the last time that we're going to have a Christmas tree at the Rockefeller Center. You know, even though there have been Jewish mayors and they didn't take away the Christmas tree. I mean, you know, come on, people.
Well, it's a fire hazard anyway. And besides, I mean, they could really start funding some of these initiatives Mondavi has, but like just for like ordering KFC at the Met Gala.
that would be a lot cheaper than some of those oyster Rockefellers that they all have, you know.
Yeah, and everybody can go to Spirit Halloween and get a perfectly good gown.
You know, and those hot dogs on the street for $2.50 and a bag of chips and a Coke, man, that's a good deal.
You know who I like to think that who's smiling down from heaven right now is the rent is too damn high guy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because that was basically the campaign. It's so good and of the moment that, you know, affordability that he had even Trump trying to pronounce affordability. It's so funny to hear even say it's the first time he ever said that word.
Well, it's probably never crossed his lips, just like supermarkets have never crossed his lips. You know, or that's groceries. Another word. That groceries. What? Gross. Yeah, I remember gross from high school. Yeah.
Groceries. Trump thought groceries was just something he did on Epstein Island.
there you go. I mean, you know, all joking aside, the Republicans are looking at this and going, holy mackerel. We got to do something, and this is why you have your favorite member of Congress, Lalo, Marjorie Taylor Greene, saying, we really need to do something about the shutdown, and we really do need to do something about affordability. Yeah, because we know that 75% of your constituents are on public assistance, so they know that a lot of their constituents are hurting, and it's certainly not helping their own party, you know, to do that.
What is going on with Marjorie Taylor Greene? She's been making the rounds on some of these talk shows lately.
Well, because she knows that she's been getting a lot of phone calls and mail from her constituents saying, where are my SNAP benefits? What's happening with the furloughs? How come I can't get a job? This is all your fault. This is the Republicans' fault. You know, she's in the
She seems to be creating a little bit of distance.
Well, her constituents are older, so she has to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, she's in Georgia. She's got a lot of poverty over there, and
tons of it. We're talking about the rural parts of the state, not Atlanta or their suburbs. So, you know, she's in that F around and find out mode, right?
How did she clean up the crazy out of her? Because she seems to, like, be on her best behavior now.
Yeah, well, she realized that, you know, I guess I better change my tune from sounding like some crazed baboon at the State of the Union, you know.
Well, you know, gummies will help with that.
She's got a new gummy supplier.
That might be, you know, who knows, but she's certainly sounding a lot more coherent and calmer than she was just a few months ago. But a lot of them are having that, you know, come to Jesus moment. They're like, ooh, yeah, this isn't good for us because our constituents are not happy. And again, the majority of people that depend on a lot of these programs are in those rural areas that all voted Republican. And they're realizing now, hey, wait a minute, this is not good, you know.
And getting back to Epstein Island, I mean, this stuff is coming out, and I'm hearing rumors that it's going to be really bad. Like, it's worse than people thought about Trump. Like,
well, this is why Adelita Grijalva, who is the Arizona, the congresswoman-elect from Arizona, is still waiting in the wings to get sworn in, because she would be the deciding vote to bring a vote on the floor to open up all those files. And the Speaker Johnson does not want it because he's still carrying water for Trump. And he knows that if he swears this person in, that's going to be it for a whole bunch of people. So they're doing that delay, 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 delay kind of thing. And here's an interesting little tidbit here is that the House Oversight Committee wants the former prince, Andrew, who's now just regular Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, to come and testify in Congress. So obviously, they can't make him because he's not a citizen. They can't subpoena him or anything. But they are requesting for him to come and testify about what he knows about the whole Epstein files. And if that ever happens, that's going to be quite a hornet's nest.
Andrew, formerly known as the Prince.
Yeah, they don't even let him call himself Andrew. You have to call him Andy now.
You know, and if you recall back in the in his younger bachelor days, because he was so good looking, he was called Randy Andy. So now he's just he's just like ornery Andy now, you know.
And after December, they're gonna call him homeless.
Pretty much, you know. So
the term is uncastled.
Oh, that's right, uncastled. That's right.
Yeah, I've gone from 45 rooms to just 2.5. You know,
2.5 bathrooms.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, those are the things that are sort of getting everybody's attention while, you know, we continue with a now record shutdown. This is the longest shutdown that we've had. And guess who had the second longest shutdown? Was Trump during his first term. There is no end in sight right now. But now, after the Tuesday elections, anybody who said, well, the Democrats should really just come to the table and compromise, that is completely gone now. In fact, that is what happened on Tuesday has emboldened the Democrats to not yield at all on anything. And it's putting it back onto the Republicans, who continue to say this is the fault of the Democrats, even though they control the White House, the House, and the Senate. So this has actually made a lot of Democrats say, oh, well, you know, we're just going to sit here and wait until you basically hang yourself on the Republican side, because everybody
comes to the table, right?
I think it's hilarious that for the airline kind of air traffic controller crisis, that Sean Duffy, the transportation guy, comes out and he keeps beating that, like, hey, this is bad. This is bad. I was like, yeah, it's bad. Do something about it. But he's not, you know, saying their whole thing of it's the Democrats' fault. He just goes out there and is like, it's going to be terrible. And it's like,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's
real confident.
I mean, well, look, even the craziest among them is changing her tune a little bit.
Right.
So yeah, they should take a cue from the canary in the coal mine, right? Of the crazy coal mine.
Well, Trump said today they should both parties should stay and work it out or use the nuclear option. So he's starting to panic a little bit.
Well, and the Democrats have already said, we're not doing the nuclear option here. We're not, you know, this is all on you guys over there on the other side of the political aisle. And again, you know, Trump is like, well, I don't know what's going on. And, you know, it's just the Republicans. And, you know, he had a bunch of pharmaceutical CEOs yesterday in his office talking about the price of drugs. While the government shut down, one of the guests that was there fainted. And what did Trump do? He got up and just stood there.
He stood like a wax dummy.
He didn't even turn around to see, at least fake, that maybe he was concerned about this person lying on his back in the.
He had an oh well face.
I guess the attention has shifted away from me, so I'm just going to stand here, you know, while they attend to him. And, you know, and this is the problem with a lot of what even some Republicans are saying privately, is that those kinds of optics look really bad. You know, when you have a president who has a Halloween party with the Great Gatsby theme, who doesn't even realize what happened at the end of the Great Gatsby, you know, tears down half of the White House for a ballroom that nobody needs and certainly nobody wants, when you have all of these people trying to figure out how they're going to feed their kids tomorrow, or, you know, agreeing with Argentina to give them $40 billion when we're still trying to figure out how to fund SNAP. I mean, all of these are really bad optics for the Republicans. The
states are going hungry, and he's giving away all that money.
Yeah, but hey, you know, but weight loss medicine is going to be lower.
Oh, yeah. It's going to go from 500 to 300. Yeah. Okay.
Everyone's clamoring for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I want. Well, I guess if I take this pill, I won't feel hungry, so I'll be okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, come on. And you know, the Republicans realize that this is not looking good for them, all of these things. And so privately, a lot of them are saying, you know, we need to cut to the chase, but they're not willing to say it publicly. Yeah. And that's what the problem is.
Wow. Well, Patricia, we've almost solved all the problems of D.C., but we're gonna have to continue next week. But thank you. And again, happy belated birthday one day.
Thank you.
And thank you for spending your Friday here on the Pocho Hour of Power.
Oh, I would never miss it unless I have to miss it, you know.
Happy birthday. Yeah, no more of that. No more of that.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you guys next week, man.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Patricia Guadalupe. There she goes, our D.C. correspondent here on the Pocho Hour of Power. And let's go to a short break and come back with some music and also our man in New Mexico, Russell Contreras. And then I'm going to talk about a little concert situation. And then we're going to talk sports ball with Speedy Gonzalez. And unless I'm crazy, maybe we're going to have the sports report right now. So I don't know. What do I know? I'm only the host of the Pocho Hour of Power here on KPFK 90.7 FM. We'll be right back with more Pochismo after this.
Oh, yeah.
Margaret Prescott will host a one-hour special on the crisis in the Caribbean region on Sojourner Truth this afternoon, Friday, November 7th at 5 p.m. Tune in to hear guests from Trinidad and Tobago, Latin America, and Barbados. You'll hear leaders and activists in the region responding to the Trump administration's continued blowing up of boats in the Caribbean, as well as two in the Pacific that has thus far claimed 66 lives. What is the historic context, and what are the wider implications? You won't want to miss Margaret Prescott on Sojourner Truth this afternoon, Friday, November 7th at 5 p.m. right here on KPFK.
Want some more? Come on now, that's a concert right there.
New career for Jeff Keller. Funky. Yeah, that's one way. And they're going to be at the East Side Story Car Show by the Sea, the November 15th in San Pedro, 2451 Signal Street, from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. It's going to have One Way and the Young Hearts, Noriega. It's gonna be lots of hip hop.
Invisible Man Band.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. And that is November 15th, East Side Story Car Show by the Sea. And it's brought to you by Thump Records and a whole bunch of other people, Oldies Craft Beer, Fleet Line, everybody. So 2451 Signal Street, November 15th. That's in San Pedro. East Side Story, Car Show by the Sea. That sounds great. And Jeff Keller will be there, funkin'.
Hey, that's the day before my birthday, so I'm going to be there. Come on now.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Hide the ladies. And now we have on the line our man from New Mexico and also from Axios. So he's kind of a international guy here. Well, local and national. It's Russ Contreras. Russell Contreras, welcome back to the Pocho Hour Power, man.
I don't think I can speak without the intro music. I think that's
oh shoot!
That's part come on, of the it's playing right now. It's playing right now.
Ah, now that's good. Now they got the juices flowing. Thank you so much. Well, big news today this week, obviously, the election in New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, with a lot of municipal elections around the country, gave us a preview of what could be happening in 26. Democrats did very well, overperformed in many benchmarks. At the same time, we've released a new poll in partnership with Axios, Ipsos, and Telemundo. They gave us a pulse on Latino voters and Latinos in the United States. What we found is, surprise, large sentiment of pessimism among Latinos. The idea, we asked the question, do you think it's a good time to be Latino, good or bad? Overwhelmingly, the numbers have dropped dramatically from Democrats. You're seeing multi-point numbers just saying, no, it's a terrible time to be Latino among independents, among Democrats. Only among Republicans do you see a slight uptick. But this shows right now, Latinos just don't feel connected to the United States. We asked the question, do you feel you still have connections or you can achieve the American dream? Only 40% or so said they do. This is a number, a dramatic drop, just a few months ago where it was like 60%. We always ask this question. Doesn't really change, but the numbers have dropped. Interesting, Donald Trump's poll numbers among Latinos have been steady. And by being steady, they mean steadily low. Only about 30-something percent view him favorably. And the Democrats aren't picking up on this. So what this shows is that there's deep pessimism, but Democrats have not taken advantage of this. This poll shows warning signs for Republicans, but also warning signs for Democrats.
I think you have to poll Latinos at dinner time and say, are you happy about being Latino? It's like, yeah, right now I am.
Right now I am, except if you had to just buy these groceries to make this. Flour tortillas up a large percent. Corn tortillas are up. But even the small things, canned beans, all this is up. And when we polled Latinos on what are they most concerned about? Overwhelmingly, they say affordability. Interesting, immigration is now number two. It's always been like number four or so, you know, behind crime and climate change and so forth. But immigration has shot up, not necessarily because they're opposed to what's going on, although their numbers are showing that just like everybody else, but because they feel the enforcement is discriminating against them. So it's not necessarily that they're deporting, you know, my primo. That's because you may be caught in a deportation too, even though you're an American citizen. So across the board, like other ethnic groups, they just don't see how the immigration, the way it's being conducted right now, is beneficial to the country, and the poll is reflecting that.
Yeah, so Russell, you're saying like right now, and I can see how the numbers look like this, that it's probably the worst time to be Latino. Has there any studies been on when is the best time to be Latino? What is the golden era? I'm just asking because if I get my hands on a time machine, that's where I'm going.
Well, you remember we had a look on the 2000s when Ricky Moore came out and everybody was trying to be Latino. We had the Latin Grammys on network television. That was a pretty good time. Everybody wanted to do it. Even Michael Jackson sang a Latino song and tried to go in Spanish. You know, that's a good question. I would probably argue if you told people, remember, both are strongly going after the Latino vote. Everybody was in the future. You had Bush articulating that we needed immigration reform, but also he needed to go after Latino small businesses. Different time. And that's just, it seems like a long time ago.
Right. Yeah.
At that time, when you poll people, the number was really high. had been going up and down ever since the turn on political fallout. But even after September 11th, there wasn't this pushback. It seems now, primarily because of the rhetoric, mainly on the right, but also the left, you have people who just say, you know, that you guys are too woke on the one side, or that you fit into the narrative. And like right now, Latinos feel politically homeless, or excuse me,
politically. I mean, I remember when they used to accuse us of being too lazy. Now we're too woke. What do they want? Something in between.
I know that you get punished. Yeah, you're getting punished because you work too much, right? And you're working too much for low wages. Now, before it was too lazy. Which is it? You got to make up your mind.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a schizophrenia when they look at us. So it's always been Latinos have always been walking on eggshells ever since 1848, when people who had Spanish land grants were then turned into bandidos, right? Because they were standing up for their land. So
I would argue it started happening when Cabeza de Vaca crashed into Galveston. He was walking on eggshells right away, especially when Native people walked up and said, "What's up?" And he's like, "Oh, man," and they enslaved him. Yeah, that was pretty bad back then, too.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah. Also coming up, I mentioned this last week, we did a story talking to a number of white Christians who say white Christians are running for office more in 2026 as Democrats. We were tracking about two dozen or so, almost three dozen of white Christians, moderate Christians running as Democrats. We've never seen that number that high in a long time. Usually these are pastors, I should say, white Christian pastors who are running. You do have pastors who run as Democrats, but they tend to be African-American, sometimes Latino. But it's usually when white pastors do run, they run as Republicans. This signals that there is something bubbling in American Christianity, where white moderates are saying, wait a minute, the way this is being articulated is problematic, and we want to speak out. I talked to one guy who runs an organization out of in the Midwest, saying that they've recruited these. You've got Episcopalians, you've got Lutherans who are running in key races in Pennsylvania, Iowa, Texas, Arkansas, in some swing districts. They're not running away from their faith. They're embracing it. But they articulating that Jesus is not necessarily someone who judges, but someone who is there to advocate for the least of these. This is a very different articulation than say conservatives are doing.
And let's just hope they don't start a rock band.
No, some of these guys are pretty good singers. I don't know, man. Hip hop, Christian hip hop. That one time I was hanging out in Lalo's Laguna Beach mansion, and he was playing some Christian hip hop. It was really kind of disturbing, but pretty good.
I wanted to make the white gardeners happy.
Yeah, it was like two Jesus crew or something like that. I don't know what it was.
Two Jesus crew.
it was pretty astonishing.
Oh my God. Well, Russell, we really appreciate it. We got to move on because we got a huge sports segment coming on. But we appreciate you coming on to the Pocho Hour Power with Axios. How can people access Axios?
Go to axios.com/newsletters to sign up there. Keep in mind, we also have a story coming out this week. Did you know that churches are using AI more? And in fact, they're creating AI chatbot Jesus. You can ask Jesus through a chatbot your deepest questions, and Jesus can text you back. Follow that here on Axios.com this weekend. Ahoy!
thank you, Russell. Thank you, chatbot Jesus. we might as well cover all the bases. Thank you, Russell. We'll see you next week on the Pocho Hour Power.
Ahoy! See you later.
Ahoy! See you. And Jeffrey Keller, take it away.
Oh, man. This is Jeff Keller, Pocho Hour Power. This is our sports segment talking to my man right here. Go ahead, player. Tell him who you is.
Hello, everyone. I'm Charlie Gonzalez. And thank you, Jeff. And thank you to the Pocho Hour Power, other co-hosts, for having me on. Lalo and Atul, I appreciate it.
I'm sorry we don't have the whole hour for you, man, because everyone's talking about the World Series and the Dodgers.
I know. It was exciting, and a little story about how my father and I kind of found out what was going on during the World Series. So we had the TV on, and that is much further back than the radio, and so we would hear what happens, and then we would wait to film it on our phones on the TV. It was... we were excited. We couldn't come back down to Earth. It was so exciting. And then the next day at the Rams game, they had a clip from the end of the World Series playing. And so the ball just kept rolling. I'm still riding on a high, and now we just got to look to three-peat.
Wow. Are you saying that there's a major gap between the radio and the TV commentary?
It is, because in today's day and age, you know, you have the internet, which it's completely dependent on your speed, right? And you don't have the old-fashioned television signal, which is much quicker. And so, you know, my dad, you know, took the radio and plugged it in by the TV, and then maybe 30 seconds after we heard Rick Monday make the call, we would see the play, and so we knew exactly what was going to happen.
Oh, that's fun. That's that's kind of not very 1940s of you. I don't know.
Well, the rest of us are just watching the play-by-play.
The rest of us are just getting drunk and not worrying about all this.
Oh, man, well, I was stressed. I ain't going to lie. Can I
tell you what I did?
What'd you do?
We had a viewing party here. First, we had a big Halloween trick-or-treat viewing party with a big screen playing for the trick-or-treaters for the Friday game, and then Saturday had people over for the game, but I was getting so stressed out. My compadre was getting so stressed out, he was running outside to smoke cigarettes in between innings, right? And then I was getting so stressed out, I have been called a cooler before. You know what I did? I just went around the corner and sat in my chair away from the TV, away from the group. And I said, I'm not going to move a muscle until the game's over. Cause it was already like ninth inning to 11th inning. And I was like, I am jinxing this game. I said, I'm the cooler, and I'm going to sit there. So I would like a trophy also for the help that I gave to the Dodgers.
That's right.
Oh, you said cooler. I thought you said something else.
No. not down there.
Well, I did something I didn't do a long time, and I prayed. And I said, please, let the big blue man in the sky, please.
You prayed to your running back, Jesus?
Please, we need this. Yeah.
Well, really, the comeback they had in the final two games can be attributed to one thing, and that's Dave Roberts. And he had to kind of get rid of the narrative that he was an overmanager and he'd make the wrong decision at the worst time and the Dodgers would lose because of it. And these last 2 years have especially gotten rid of that. And here's what I think is so great is moving Mookie Betts to cleanup and putting Will Smith in the two-hole, because Freddie Freeman was getting on base and Mookie Betts wasn't able to do anything. Then the change to take Edmund out of center field, put in Andy Páez. He knocks down Kike Hernandez. Miguel Rojas hitting his first home run since September 19th. And you had the Max Muncy home run to bring in within one. And then Will Smith got a solo home run in the 11th to go up 5-4. And that's when I felt like all the momentum's on our side. We have high baseball IQ in the infield and all the changes necessary we need to make, especially the throw from Rojas to Smith to tag out the winning runner.
Wait. Let's talk about that play, because Smith's foot came off the plate.
Yeah.
And he happened to put it back on it just in time.
And he said on Jimmy Kimmel Live, he did not actually know, because it happened so quick. You know, we see at the replay, it takes like 4 seconds for that whole portion of the play to play on TV. But so I believe him when he said he didn't know, and he just believed the home umpire made the out call, and they reviewed it, and they kept it. They didn't have to overturn it. And also the ground rule double going underneath the left field wall pads
in game six.
Oh my goodness, because that's a solo playable ball. You can grab it and throw it in, but they knew that they threw up their hands, they rolled the dice, and it worked.
Because the umpires. they go over the ground rules before the game.
Yeah.
And so they tell you what to do because every stadium has different ground rules because they're so unique. And so that was a smart play by the center fielder at that time.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the real person. Let's talk about the Yamamoto.
Oh.
Come on now.
You know what the mound is called when he's pitching?
What?
Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island. Come on, Yoshi's Lalo. Island. Come on now.
I was going to say Mount Fuji.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the Dodgers showed? When immigrants and Americans work together, we win World Series.
That's right. And
against Canada.
Against Canada. We become champions.
And there really, for those who were like, who they were rooting for in the World Series was all politics driven. I don't think either really could like fully get behind one team. I was just happy that we went back to back and we stopped the Yankees from being able to say, oh, we're still the last team to win back to back. Well, get ready for us to three-peat next year, because then that label is going to be gone too. And the parade, did you happen to go to the parade, Jeff?
I only go one time. So I've already been to one, so I don't go again.
No.
It's like the World Series, right?
Yeah. But you do have a ring on. Last time I wore one of the replicas that actually opens, and that's the one they give out at the stadium. I was thinking about wearing mine so we could match, and I just didn't make the right decision.
Well, it happens.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Happens. Yeah. But I took the train to the parade, and I got a spot right by the railing underneath the tree, and it was perfect. So when I got tired of leaning forward, I could lean back. When I got tired of leaning back, I could lean forward. And then once you could see the cop cars turn the corner, then it was everyone went nuts, and I saw magic at the front of the first bus, and there wasn't that one player who is, you know, garnering all the attention by being hammered. Everyone kind of shared the spotlight. I could hear every player's name being shouted by someone in the audience, and I actually, once they opened the guardrails, once the parade went by, I scooped up a couple of handfuls of confetti, stuffed it in my pockets, and brought it home for my dad.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, to talk about the series, though, they weren't supposed to have the Dodgers weren't, relief pitching was supposed to be horrible. And that's what got them through these series. And the other thing that got them through the series was they only batted like 168 with runners in scoring position. So the long ball is what really won it for them in this series.
Yeah, and those three home runs, all solo home runs, and like the Blue Jays, lucky that they still had a chance because like had there been people on base, the game would have been over sooner. But they all those home runs came up with empty bases, and so you're right about that. Is when there were runners in scoring position, they couldn't get runs home.
Couldn't get them home.
But it was even more of a detriment to the Blue Jays when you had Guerrero get the double and he didn't score, and he looked so dejected from the dugout the next time that it happened.
I love when they look dejected like that.
Yeah,
I love that. I'm a Dodger fan, true and true. Right? I mean, I remember when they won it with Hershiser. I remember when they had Pedro Guerrero, and they came back and won that. I remember when they had Say, Lopes, Garvey, and Russell, Yeager, man, Ferguson. Man, that's how far. When I was a kid, I would cry if they lost, Lalo. That's how bad it was.
No, but hey. This is a good time. It's a perfect time to be a Dodger fan, and those big free agency acquisitions, they're going to come in the next few weeks. We've already got a few things like Justin Dean being waived and the Giants picking him up immediately. But those big signings, I'm sure there's going to be more people complaining that we're ruining baseball, but we don't care. We'll gladly ruin baseball if it means filling up that trophy case.
Our big signings didn't work out this year.
Yeah, they didn't, but there's still time for them to develop. There's a few like one-year guys who are probably going to be gone.
Gates gone.
Mm-hmm. Michael Conforto might be gone.
Might.
Yeah.
There ain't no question. As soon as the game was over.
Didn't make the World Series roster, and he picked up from the Giants just like Snell, and there was some inconsistencies and doubts, like could he do it?
He was horrible.
Yeah, he didn't. He did okay.
No, he didn't do okay. He batted 198. He only had like 9 home runs. He was horrible. I heckled him every time he came out the field. He sucked.
Well, the Dodgers are definitely bringing home the groceries. Sure.
With the trophy.
Yeah.
Wow.
No tariffs.
We didn't get to say much about Mark Walter being a part-time or part owner of GeoPro the private prison system, but I guess we'll have another segment about that.
Yes.
Because that's when, you know, Jeff knows, that's when I'm turned on to sports.
When you're
politics
cooking.
And sports.
That's when Lalo's that's when cooking I'm, right there.
That's right. Dodger dogs and politics. Anyway, we gotta bounce, guys. It's been such a great Bocho Hour Power. Charlie, thank you for being on.
Of course, thank you for having me on.
We want you on more, so bigger doses of Speedy Gonzalez. All right?
There you go.
Sounds good.
That's right. We got to go. Thank you, Patricia Guadalupe, Russell Contreras, Esteban Zuhl, Jeffrey Keller, D'Angelo doing our sound. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Gary Baca, the 5G, for producing the show. And I'm Lalo Alcaraz. And we'll